years ago, I had a startup and we raised seed money and angel money in a Series A. And I had a co-founder who was brilliant at it. It takes such a skill to close the deal. We have all these interested angels. I need them to sign the check.
Imagine living your normal day and getting your car fueled up on demand. Seriously, check out LA Startup Refill Fuel and enter code WeAreLATech for $10 off. That's Refill Fuel. It's amazing. Literally, you can be anywhere and have your gas totally topped off the tank and not even have to deal with it. No more gas stations. To go to refillfuel.com. That's refillfuel.com. Code WeAreLATech for $10 off. We could not do this without the community believing in our vision together. We Are LA Tech is independently funded, funded by you, the community. So to support We Are LA Tech, go to patreon.com/WeAreLATech. That's patreon.com/WeAreLATech.
Hello, We Are LA Tech listeners. As I'm sure you can tell now, for a third time, I am still not Esprit. This is Matt Mayberry from Dopamine Labs, the AI neuroscience-backed company helping make apps more addicting, more habit-forming, and more sticky. Today, we have a phenomenal guest who happens to sort of work in the same space that I do. So if you are interested in habits and behavior and neuroscience and artificial intelligence, this is the podcast for you. I am not going to give you too much. I'm just going to pass it off to our guest today. So if Ariel, if you want to introduce yourself, tell the listeners who you are, what you do, where you're from, we can start there.
Great. I'm happy to be here, Matt. And yes, Smart Spark does indeed deal with how can we use technology to better people's lives by looking into that benevolent hooked model where we make apps more sticky, but use that stickiness. In our case, we use it to help people adhere to what their doctor's orders are. So in particular, we're taking people in recovery and helping them write the story of their own healing. So they participate in an experience where they get what feels like social media nudges that are like a story where they see themselves in their own recovery. They get support from peers and from their counselors and novelty in the form of social media clips and relevant third-party imagery that come at the times and locations that they need support most.
Amazing. And what is your role at Smart Spark?
So I'm the co-founder and CEO. And I started this company because a couple of years ago I was smoking and I was not exercising, and I'm a designer that's built addicting products for Apple and Disney, and I know a lot about how we can make things sticky. And yet none of the existing trackers or apps could seem to hook me into a daily sort of practice. And I think there are models that work for different personality types, but I became obsessed with this notion of how people get hooked into story in ways that tracking and like existing user experiences don't seem to do. So I I'm really fascinated by the use of visuals in terms of priming behavioral choices in people. So like, why, when you see a red light, is that more of an impact than seeing the word stop? So there was a study I heard about how they had shown smokers personalized videos that simulated a heart attack, that they had a heart attack and the repercussions on their families and friends, and that resulting in over 50% cessation rate permanently.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, how is that not built to scale? And so I took that and sort of got a great behavioral psychologist at UCLA named Sean Young, who just published a great book called Stick With It. And we set about trying to take this sort of model and build in motivational interviewing, which is where you kind of personalize experiences for people, and like neuro hacks, and how can we use that to help address the outpatient behavioral health market. And the reason we sort of focused on that outpatient behavioral health market is really the path to market, because it seems quite difficult to find how to monetize this unless you're like a really exciting company with a great model like Dopamine Labs. I think it's what you guys have found and existing, building those nudges into existing platforms is really powerful and effective. So we've been pursuing funding through grant processes and working with the NIH and sort of a slow grow, really trying to measure our outcomes. And we've done pilots with looking at short-term behavior modification for food consumption and cessation of like certain trigger moments, and with really exciting results. So great.
So this is a really interesting product. And this is something that I think a lot of people are just learning about, which is the idea of behavioral design inside technology and software. Do you think you could talk a little bit about your background and how you got interested in this and maybe what you got your degree in and why or how you made the transition from designing these sticky products at Apple and give an example to merging now into what you do today at SmartSpark?
Okay, great. Yeah, I started off in the mid-90s building websites. So I've been doing this for a long time and, data always speaks to what's happening. And it was always very obvious looking at the data at how if you build feedback loops, that brings people back. And so there wasn't a framework that I really could kind of articulate like how we develop software to make people want to use it. But I think you had mentioned in your podcast, Nariel's book, Hooked, is a great sort of framework to be able to establish, like, these are the norms. And those, basically, we can say that if you give people personalized content at the right times and moments that are built on triggers, that you're going to see a loyalty. Mm-hmm. And there are certain things like, why do people love slot machines? Well, it's like, there's hope and variable reward. And so you just keep going. Yep. And part of our little rabbit brain can't kind of get out of that loop. And so I know I greatly admire that you guys at Dopamine Labs have been looking at like both creating the stickiness, but also with the Get Space.
You just need space.com.
Yeah, you just need space at sort of, we have this ethical responsibility to sort of admit to ourselves that we know how to get people to come back. And so what are we going to do with that? And how can we use that to better people's lives? And I think right now, the predictive behavioral market is getting so exciting. You know, there's one of our advisors, Vivian Ming, did pioneering work looking at how to predict bipolar episodes by looking at the data coming from movement within one's phone. They were better able to predict bipolar episodes than clinicians were. So as this world of better and better knowledge about what, when someone's going to be feeling sad, Alexa hearing tone of voice, our heart rates entering a room, what are we going to do with that data? And I think marketing and advertising always is on the cutting edge of how to exploit that data. And I think the healthcare market is desperate enough. The insurance providers and our federal government are even more like eager to find solutions to reining in the spiraling cost of behavioral related illnesses, that is the market to benevolently exploit this data. And so my background in creating like consumer friendly apps and how I felt like, God, if I can, like, I made mobile phone games for like the first NBA courtside live trackers, all the Star Wars mobile games. And I love building prototypes. Mm-hmm. Was let's prototype out, like iterative prototyping over the last couple of years. How can we use selfie video and content that feels like Snapchat, but create this social stickiness of peer support in there and peer software imprinting novelty on the nudge? And we just iterated a lot until we came to this, what we call now is like the Spark engine, which is a kind of a loop where someone comes in and they use like a video-based motivational interview that asks them to talk about, like, I'll give a simple scenario. Like if you were a recovering heroin addict, mm-hmm. and there were certain places and times and people that you could identify as triggering your use, the software asks you to talk about those places and identify them. We'll take geolocation IDs, people's face IDs, and then literally ask them about scenarios. And they film themselves talking about this. We ask them to upload images of people they love. We give them clinician-based suggestions about coping strategies, but also really help them feel like they're choosing their coping strategies. And then this goes into the Spark engine that then sends out the video nudges at the locations where they need support, time of day, or if they're on social media and they encounter someone or a situation that they feel like triggers them.
And are these triggers set by the user that is trying to either build or break this habit? Or is it set by a recommendation engine, like an AI system, or by a third-party operator? Mm-hmm. How does it typically work for a user?
Ideally, it's all of the above. At this point, we do it with the clinician, have calendars, and then location-based and user-based timers. But going forward, and the design of the technology is to use AI to keep improving when do these nudges come. The critical part that we know is that they can't be predictable, because then, you know, they're going to wear off. And essentially, we also make sure that those nudges never feel shaming. And in recovery, that's critical. Like, once somebody sees a text message that says, like, time to take your methadone, and they're like, you know, fuck you, I'm not going to take that. I'm never going to look at that text message again.
Yep.
So we keep that at like the very top of like, here is this delightful short video that shows you heroic, slaying your addiction. And there's your like a cute picture of you when you were a kid and some funny filters and a friend's photo and a little quick snippet from someone that's in your support group. To make it feel like it's delightful. We have also a narrative string that goes through these to sort of help it make it feel like you're watching a little tiny bit of a soap opera and you are the star of that soap opera.
And how are these delivered to the individuals that come via text message? They open up? Is it an in-app notification? Is it?
At this point, it's not an app. It's a web-based experience and they get a text message notification or email.
Okay.
But as one of the issues like in attacking the healthcare market is like we're very early stage, is looking at the HIPAA issues and like not cashing things on the phone. And we're trying to avoid taking the data that requires us to be HIPAA compliant. But as we're working with like the NIH on using a very limited segment of what we're doing, that has to be HIPAA compliant.
Right. Good. And would you say that Smart Spark is better for people trying to build a habit, break a habit, both? What are some of the maybe more common use cases that you see people that come onto the platform?
So yes, it's about like the critical phase when you're trying to change habits and change behaviors. So
both negative and positive.
Yes, exactly.
So if I wanted to run more and also stop smoking.
Yes.
I could take both of those and put them on.
That's a great combo that you just brought up, because the behavioral psychology kind of ethos that we're going for is saying that behavior can change, but you cannot stop behavior without a planned changed behavior. So if you are quitting smoking, it's not just we're going to bombard you with negative imagery to make you not want to smoke, but we're going to help you identify what your coping strategies are and help make those look attractive. And there were some amazing studies around with food that have come out of like credible universities where they've shown like you show maggots and then French fries and sundaes and then flowers and carrots. And lo and behold, for hours afterwards, people are eating more healthy across the board without even realizing it. So we use these sort of implicit visual priming within to help people have negative associations with the locations that they were typically using or the people that they hung out with that had a negative influence on them, and try to also positively prime their coping strategies. Because the thought is that especially for addicts in recovery, the ability to summon willpower in moments of weakness is very low. Mm-hmm. But if you give someone their coping plan in that moment in a way that they can kind of digest the same way they would digest a video clip on Instagram or Facebook, that we can trigger those neural pathways, bypassing sort of the prefrontal cortex needing to summon that thought pattern up. Like, we're going to help like insert it.
Amazing.
Yeah.
You touched on something earlier, and I hate to kind of digress here, but you talked about fundraising through grants.
Yes.
So I know one thing that Esprit likes to do on the show is when she talks to startups, just kind of figure out what people are doing different that maybe most people don't know about. And so when I was on here, we talked about fundraising and kind of the traditional VC route and how you go out and network and meet VCs and raise money and term sheets. Can you maybe talk about what it is to raise money through a grant and what another startup that was trying to do that would experience or go through or how they would maybe start that process?
Definitely. Well, I would say if you can raise money from private sources, do that. Because the grant process, grants are free money.
Yeah.
But it is a nightmare process. It is like going back to get your PhD in like bureaucracy because you need an academic as your PI and you need to do your corporation. I mean, it helps. You have to file a patent. You have to go through a lot of legal and corporate cost protection at the beginning, which can be helpful for raising money in any sector. The reason that we went after grants is because or that we are going after grants is it's actually very hard for me to raise money with my team right now. I mean, like we're trying. This is me being on here is part of that. I mean, years ago I had a startup and we raised seed money and angel money in a Series A and I had a co-founder who was brilliant at it. It takes such a skill to close the deal. We have all these interested angels. I need them to sign the check. I'm trying to step into that role. I've always been more product. I have a great co-founder who is just come on like full-time 2 months ago. And now she's like, okay, you know, let's go to this investor and that investor. And if it works out, great. But I am going to die for this company. So I am willing to do the grant writing process is many months long. And once you get it, it takes months to come in and then you have to publish and then you have to, then the first trough of money is smaller and then you can go for larger troughs. There's also foundational money that's really exciting, especially in the healthcare sector right now, because there are foundations like Do Good foundations that are interested in helping seed stage companies. The California Healthcare Innovation Fund is really exciting. We're talking to them about doing pilots here in California. They usually look at later stage companies, companies that they're already within hospital systems. So the healthcare market, like if I could take a step back, it's like a nightmare because everything takes longer. Contracts, you do lock into 2-year contracts traditionally, but getting them is very slow. Like with UCLA, to do a pilot there is a many, many month process. Whereas a private clinic, we're in there now just testing with users and we don't have to go through the same kind of structure. But yes, grants are a great resource if you're willing to do the sort of sit down, learn how you submit, go through the process. Most grants get rejected the first time and you have to hope that they get rejected well. And then you have to resubmit kind of adjusting to all of the comments that you may get back and just have like determination, an extra dose.
Right. Kind of lights that fire underneath you.
Yeah.
We're going to jump topics, but we're going to keep a similar word here. Ariel went to Grant High School, which is in the Valley, home of Arizona basketball legend Gilbert Arenas. And since we're talking about grants, I'd like to hear about you growing up in Los Angeles. So you went to Grant. And then did you stay and go to college here?
I went to UC Santa Cruz.
Okay, this so you stayed like, in California at
I
least.
I stayed in California. And then after Santa, I graduated in basically in the Silicon Valley in the early 90s and thought I would go to grad school, but then became a designer and just had this really lovely career. I ended up as a creative director for a large telco conglomerate and moving to London and being there and like making pretty good money and living a fancy, wonderful life, and then moved back to LA and worked here in my late 20s and early 30s. And that was very fun.
Okay.
And then I moved to the East Coast into Argentina and came back to LA. And the tech scene here now, I feel like it's extremely exciting and it's growing.
It is the best it's ever been.
Yes.
It's very exciting to be in tech in Los Angeles at the moment.
Yeah.
So where's the company based now? We're in the city.
In Culver City.
Yeah. Are you over in kind of the tract area or somewhere kind of different?
We are in my house.
Oh, you're in your house. Yeah. Okay. Nothing wrong with that.
Right. Yeah.
That's usually the best scenario.
Yes.
Now that you've been in LA for a while, are there any resources that you recommend or that you've come across or experience launching and growing a company here?
Yes. I think that all of the talent in terms of content are amazing and they exist nowhere else. So SmartSpark really couldn't have been done out of the Bay Area. And sometimes I think that's our competitive advantage, is that I have an award-winning filmmaker who's set on how can we make stories that motivate people and chop them up into little segments and use user-generated content. I don't think you could find someone that could do that well in other markets. And I don't think you could find as many on-screen talent that are willing to work for free or for very limited amounts. And this is still a market, I think, that knows how to make content that other markets don't.
I agree with you 100%. I think it's one of the things that we do best here in Los Angeles is we have, the downside is we don't have a lot of really good like hard tech that's here that kind of the Bay Area has. But if you talk about media or content creation and entertainment, there's no city better. We do some pretty good consumer packaged good and hardware here, but kind of that media side to the city has really pushed, I think, tech. It's brought in a lot of new money and it's allowed a lot of entrepreneurs to build companies that are not as technical as the ones in the Bay, but also kind of bring in the light and launch things like Snapchat, which I don't think you could have done in another city.
Right. Yeah. And I love Snapchat as the example of how kind of like sometimes not being a total like head in the sand, super enmeshed in the latest AI to trigger law, kind of lets you remember what do people want to do and how do they feel when they use content or, you know, what's that user experience?
Yeah, we can tend to overthink things. Sometimes we want to see a dancing hot dog or we want to see, you know, a vomiting unicorn. Those things bring, you know, they're surprising and they're delightful and they bring joy and our human brain craves that. And so it's nice to see companies kind of go after that low-hanging fruit for our own kind of enjoyment.
Yes.
Nothing wrong with that.
I love it. The vomiting unicorn.
The vomiting unicorn. Who doesn't love it, right? Built a publicly traded company on the back of a vomiting unicorn. Can you talk about maybe the 5 to 10 year plan of SmartSpark and what you see, where you see the company going, both from maybe team to the technology as well?
Sure. Yeah, I think our immediate future is that we are going to show clinical efficacy on a larger basis within the healthcare market. And then I think we'll face whether or not we are going to be part of existing platforms that are there for EMRs and outpatient care, or we build into directly to the provider. I think that in the healthcare market, acquisitions in the customer, they call it like end patient engagement. That's last year, there were over $3 billion in exits in that space alone. Not that we're building this to exit, but that's, you know, probably where we're going and we do want to make money. So it's, you know, build this so that it's useful and then let it blossom with a huge HMO or existing provider to let it get to the masses.
If you had one ask of the community here in Los Angeles, what would it be?
Keep doing things like this podcast. Let's make this community stronger. And we need to, collaborate and work together. And accept like middle-aged ladies.
Everyone's welcome here.
Right. Everyone's welcome. I think we need to break the mold up of like the stereotype of founders because there are lots of, my grandma lived to be 103. So if 45 is old, I mean, what?
Spring chicken.
There's a lot of life left. I think we need to capitalize on the intellectual property we have here in all different shapes and sizes and kind of probably try to get ourselves to be known for that.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, Los Angeles has always been such a great cultural melting pot. And I think we embrace that more than a lot of other cities do. And you're seeing more, you know, people in color that are raising money or joining VC and starting companies. And without a place like Los Angeles, I don't know if that would have been possible in some of the other bigger tech hubs. So it's a pretty easy ask for people to do. Has there been a LA tech company that you've come across that you've been impressed with or surprised you? Outside of Dopamine Labs, obviously.
Oh, yeah. A lot of them. Dopamine Labs, because I'm so obsessed with triggers, I really admire what you guys are doing. So many, so many comparatively now that I like what Jason's done. I in particular, because I don't think he had to build that company.
Do you want to tell people that don't know a little bit more about
it? Yes. He's taking, you know, data to help make it transparency within the employment market and what people are making. And I think he's built it out of a desire to like make things more transparent and empower people. And I admire that. And it's user friendly and well designed.
It is. If you haven't used it, basically you can go on Comparably and you can see both like equity amounts and salary amounts for various positions in tech. So it's kind of like LinkedIn meets Glassdoor meets this like gigantic salary database. So if you feel like you have 5 years experience and you are maybe like the VP of sales for a startup and you feel like you're not being compensated, you can actually look and see all the data from all the startups in Los Angeles and in various cities and see how you stack up and compare and kind of evens the playing field and makes maybe negotiations a little bit better and easier going forward. So Jason's built a pretty good product there. He's a smart guy. Where and how can people connect with you? Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat?
Great.
List them out.
Yes. My Twitter feed is like a long list of everything related to nudging. So, and it's very easy to remember. It's at ARI, ARI.
That's it?
That's it.
You got a three-letter Twitter handle?
That's one of my very good
friends. Who do you know at Twitter?
Noah Glass, who is one of, is the fourth Beatle or fifth Beatle or whatever. Look him up. I mean, we were playing with when it was Twitter and I was like, oh, that sounds sexual, Noah. I was like, that sounds weird. Are you sure? Twitter and tweets. I don't know why it sounded too sexual, but it was, you know, they had created Odeo and he was like, oh, you know, the podcast directory came out. I mean, iTunes came out. And so it was like, oh, now we've raised money. We're going to pivot to something else. And it was like the first days of playing with Twitter. We worked together at a crazy startup.
Okay. So, yeah. And now you've got a great Twitter handle to remember by. Anything else? Any Facebook for either for you or the company?
Well, one of the things that I have to do is that there is a public facing website that people are welcome to ask me for an invitation to, because the registration is hidden, but where you can experiment with it as a lay person. That's www.smartspark.me.
Perfect. Anything else you'd like to say before we sign off here? Any notes to the community, to people about behavior, any recommendations, books, podcasts, TV shows, anything you want to say?
Okay. Try to limit the negative news you consume on a daily basis, because it may not seem like it, but you're filling up your hard drive with junk and it gets really hard to maintain willpower with all the stuff that's going on around us.
Any tips or tricks to avoid that?
Yeah. Get some space.
You just need space.com, obviously. Just turn off your phone.
Yeah.
Easiest
and
one
ever. Wallow
in
happy memories as much as possible. It's a lot harder to do than it sounds.
That's a good one, too. Surround yourself with some good people. Make some good memories.
Yeah.
Well, that does it for us. Thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Has been wonderful. And I hope everybody out there, if you are interested in behavioral technology, habits, behavior design, user experience, persuasive technology, check out smartspark.me. Follow Ariel on Twitter. And maybe you'll learn something. And that does it for us.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
We Are LA Tech is independently funded by the community. We couldn't make this happen without your support. If you too want to contribute to We Are LA Tech and see us making the podcast, building the mobile apps, creating the events year after year, consider contributing at patreon.com. That's patreon.com/We Are LA Tech. Thank you. We appreciate you.